What we just saw there was really an expression of the Luke chapter 5 passage from last night. A turning point in Peter's life. A turning point in James and John's life. Jesus said, "Follow me." And they had to make a decision. Turning points, turning points, turning points. We just heard this morning from Herman, man. That, you know, it's so funny as a pastor, as a speaker, I show up on the weekend thinking I'm speaking. God met me this morning through Pastor Herman's message. That was so powerful. Thank you. That was for me. And I loved how he led us into his story. This is my story. This is my song. And he led us into a turning point in his life. Do you remember it? And I love this point. Find Christ in the crisis. Find Christ in your crisis. And he did when they lost that baby. And that was a turning point in your faith journey. Tonight, I want to talk to you men about turning points. Mark chapter 8. If you have a Bible, you can open it to Mark chapter 8. We're going to look at verses 22 all the way to 37. 22 to 37. And I'm not going to read the whole passage to start. I'm going to read it in reflection. But just so you know, Mark chapter 8, scholars say it's the turning point in Mark's gospel. They also tell us it's the turning point in Jesus' life and ministry, because it's in Mark chapter 8 that he begins to say, "And now you guys know that I'm going to suffer and I'm going to die." It's also a turning point in Peter's life, Mark chapter 8. And we're going to get into that. But I'm hoping that maybe tonight, I'm praying that tonight is a turning point for many of you. Spiritual turning point. A night of decision. Spiritual decisions tonight. Where from now on, from this moment on, there's a shift. Something happens in your life. I'm praying that something supernatural happens, something really significant happens in your heart tonight. And I'm going to start by just telling you there's three stories in Mark's gospel that are turning point stories. I'm going to just tell you three quick stories of turning points in my life. Turning points that changed the trajectory of my life. First one changed the trajectory of my marriage. I don't even know if it was 10 years ago, 8 years ago, but our church has a partnership with World Vision, Team World Vision, and we are part of the LA Marathon, and it's for global water, clean water in the DR Congo, the Covenant Church. We have a partnership in the DR Congo, and so Ocean Hills, our church, has partnered with Team World Vision, and we run marathons and raise money and build community together. And so it's a whole nother story, but a few years into it, we have World Vision come in, they make a pitch, and then, hey, stick around if you're sensing that God might be nudging you to run the marathon and help raise money for the global clean water crisis. So you know me, I did it the first year, and now here we are a few years later, and my wife, who's not athletic, not really interested in any of that, stays behind. I'm like, oh my gosh. So I go sit with her. I go, "Now, honey, are you going to run the marathon?" She goes, "No, I'm going to do the half." I said, "It's amazing, because you can do the full or the half." She goes, "I'm going to do the half." I said, "That's incredible. You're going to run the half marathon?" She goes, "No, I'm going to walk it." "Oh, that's wonderful." And then I said this, "Do you want me to do it with you?" And this is what she said. I never forgot it. She goes, yeah, I want you to do it with me, not me doing it with you. If you're willing to do it with me, which means at my pace, don't try and get me to run, we're walking it, then I would love to have you join me and be along my side. And so Saturday morning, where the training runs, everybody goes running, the whole group, except John and Natalie Ireland. Here we go. And I'm just telling you, it was such a growth turning point for me. I'm like, are you sure you don't want to run, honey? And she said, go ahead. I know you want to run with the group. Go ahead. I'm not that dumb. So we walked, we trained, and then the day came. And we have a picture up here. I'm wearing a skirt because somebody said, if you wear a skirt walking the 13 miles, I'll give you an extra $1,000 for Team World Vision. I said, I'll put a skirt on for $1,000. And so we start walking. People are running by us. We're walking. There we are. And all of a sudden, my wife starts jogging. I'm like, what's going on? She starts running. I'm like, oh, are we running now? She's running. Yeah. Then she stops. Okay, stop. You know. And then running a little more and then stop. We kind of jogged and walked for 13 miles. And we get to the last straightaway. It's in Santa Monica along, I think it's Pacific Avenue or something like that, down to where the wharf is. And, you know, the last straightaway, marathon, half marathon, I mean, you run. I mean, you finish, right, men? You finish. You don't walk it in. So I couldn't help myself. I'm like, because we ran a little bit. I'm like, we're going to run it in together? She said, you go ahead. I know you want to. And so we crossed the finish line together, but that was a turning point in my marriage because as a pastor, my wife, Natalie, has been supporting me. She quit seminary. She was in seminary and quit to financially support me. She has adjusted her plans to be with me. And so here we are, I don't know, we're married for 30-something years at that point. And when she said, I want you to be alongside of me and do it with me rather than me doing it with you. Do you guys understand that language, that difference? That was a turning point in my marriage of me surrendering, being always in charge and in control, and me saying, I'm going to walk alongside and support my wife, and I'm going to support her dreams and what she wants to do. That's the first story. Second story. Because I think turning points are personal, they're spiritual, they're professional, they're also painful. I hope maybe tonight, even later tonight, you might share a painful turning point in your life with the guys you came with. I'll tell you, you know, we don't connect over our successes, men. We try and impress each other with them. We bond over our vulnerability, over when we're weak, over when we have hardship in our life. And so our story, the personal painful story in our journey, is the infertility journey, trying to get pregnant for 10 years and being a pastor in the church and reading scripture that says children are a blessing from the Lord. And of course, the story I'm telling myself is, well, I've given my life to serve the Lord. Why isn't he blessing us? And of course, all my guy friends are like, oh man, must be fun trying to get pregnant all the time. For those that have struggled through infertility, that's not fun. Get home right now. We got to have sex. Wait, I'm in a meeting, you know. And now you got to perform right now. Now, I know if you're 21, maybe, but you know. And there were well-meaning people in the church. Just, you know what? Just adopt. then you'll get pregnant. I've seen it happen so many times. Well, our journey, we decided to do the in vitro route, right? We did that. Didn't work. Had everybody praying. Didn't work. Just adopt. Just adopt. Okay, so we decide, let's go through the adoption process. We connect with a birth mom. She picks us. We like her. And in the state of California, I don't know if it's still true, this is 30 years ago, you pay the birth mom's bills in the tune of, in our case, about $18,000 to $20,000. And one morning my wife woke up and she said, call the hospital. I feel like the baby's been born. So I called the hospital and they go, oh yeah, she had the baby like 5 days ago. She's gone. She scammed us. She ditched us. And the reason I know that is because I was calling her, calling her, calling her. And then I got a phone call, a male voice. Quit calling this number or harm will come to your family. God, where are you? Where are you? I thought you were a good God. I just, man, that's this morning. It's just, this is where the rubber meets the road in our faith. Will I find Christ in the crisis? Will, and so for me, I was in a doubt storm. I was like, ah, here I am in ministry, but God's not showing up for me. The silence, the more we pray, the worse it gets. And it was hard. Somebody gave me Philip Yancey's book, Disappointment with God. Great book. Here's the takeaway that I remember. He said this. He said, miracles, you're praying for that miracle? He said, miracles create miracle junkies. We become dependent on the miracle. He said, will you trust God if you don't get the miracle? Will you trust that he's good if you don't get pregnant? If your baby dies, if you lose your mom early, when hardship, loss, pain, confusion, ouches, divorce, whatever it might be, will you trust God? And that was a turning point for me with Jesus. That was a turning point for me in my own personal spiritual life. God, I'm going to trust that you're good. Even though, and I love that Max Lucado line, even though I can't trace your hand, I can trust your heart. I trust that you're good. Third story. Turning points. So there's a marriage turning point, and here's what the end of that story. I didn't even tell you. So the adoption agency called us and said, hey, there's another birth mom. She's due in 2 weeks. Do you want to jump in? And I was like, I'm out. Can't do it. I'm out. My wife's like, we're in. I go, we're not in. Yeah, we are. We're in. Suck it up, man. And 2 weeks later, we brought home Shannon Ireland. She's 30 years old now. We brought her home the day after she was born. And, you know, again, you sometimes when you look back on the story, and you go, oh, God was so good. God was so good. I see Christ in the crisis. Thank you for that insight, Herman. Third story, it's a kind of a big story. Some of you maybe have heard it. I'm friends with a guy most of you have never heard of. His name's Stedman Graham. But you've heard of his significant other. Her name is Oprah. And Stedman and I have been golf buddies for many, many years. And Stedman, several years ago, turned 60. For his 60th birthday, he had a party at Oprah's house. Oprah lives in Santa Barbara in Montecito. And they invited 60 guests. Somehow, my wife and I were on the guest list of the 60 people. And so we went over to O's house, as they call her. And we're hanging out. We're schmoozing. There's celebrities there. And Gladys Knight did a little private concert for us 60 people. It was awesome. But they had three tables. Table of 20, 10 on each side. This way, and this way. And I'm at this table. And I'm like, stuck with these people that I'm like, I don't know you. How come I'm not over at that table? That's what I'm thinking. I want to be at that table. Why am I at this table? And I'm sitting across, my wife and I, from a couple I've never met, never seen. They're in their 80s. And this is just full transparency. I'm like, really? I get stuck with the old people at this cool party? So I avoid talking to them. I don't want to get stuck talking to them. I'm kind of still looking around. Maybe there's somebody else I can chat with. It's like a 5-course meal. Second course comes. And now we're about the main course, and now it's starting to feel awkward. It's like, man, I haven't even talked to the people right across the table from me. I just have to do it. So I'm like, hey, I want to introduce myself. I'm so sorry we haven't had a chance. My name's John, my wife, Natalie. This little old man goes, I'm Jimmy, grumpy old man. Jimmy, I'm Jimmy. And this is Mary, my wife. I'm like, oh, hi, Jimmy, nice to meet you. He goes, first question, so what do you do? I'm like, well, you'll never guess. He goes, well, let me try. And I'll never forget, it made me laugh. He says, he's looking around at the, you know, who's the guest invite. He goes, you own your own fashion magazine. I said, no, I'm a pastor. He's like, what? You mean like a minister? I go, yeah, like a minister of a church. He says, how'd you get invited to this party? I'm like, I don't know. He says, well, how's business? I said, actually, I don't know. We're kind of stagnant. Not really growing, not really declining, just kind of stagnant. And he goes, how come? Just direct. How come? I go, I don't know. I really don't know. Are you the leader of this church and you don't know why it's stagnant? Isn't that your job to know? I said, yeah, I guess so. He says, are you a man of prayer? I said, I am. I like to think that I am. He says, well, doesn't it say somewhere in the good book that if you ask the good Lord for bread, he won't give you a stone? Yeah, I think that's in Matthew's gospel. He goes, do you think the good Lord wants your church to grow? I said, I do. Well, doesn't seem like you're praying hard enough then. And then he said this. He said, John, I wouldn't go to your church. And you know why? I don't think you're all in. I don't think you're all in. Because he asked me earlier in the conversation, are you into saving souls? And I went, we don't really use that language. Well, what language do you use, John? I don't know. And he could feel my hesitancy, my uncertainty, my not all in. So he said, I wouldn't go to your church because you're not all in as the leader. I go, well, how do you know? How do you know? He goes, but John, tonight we're going to find out if you are. What? I'm like, I came to hang out with Oprah. Wait, who are you? So he said this. He said, if you believe the good Lord, he kept saying the good Lord, if you think the good Lord wants your church to grow, and if you're a praying man, he goes, here's what you're going to do. You're going to get together with your leaders, and you're going to come up with a strategy that you think, if we do these 5 things, we're going to have a good shot at reaching more people. And we're going to pray about it. And we're going to, he goes, that's what you're going to do. And when you do that, he pulls out his pen on this paper napkin. You're going to call this number. And I said, okay, what do you mean? He goes, well, here's what you're going to do. you're going to come up with that strategy. And I'm going to know you believe in it because you're going to come up with it with your leaders. And then, little caveat, he goes, and because you believe in it, you're going to go out and raise $100,000 because you believe in your vision. You're all in. If you're all in, if you believe in it, you're going to go do this. Whew. I said, okay, well, so he writes this phone number on this napkin. I go, right on, is that your cell phone? He goes, no. He goes, that's my assistant. I go, we're buddies now. Give me your cell. He goes, no, you get this number. So, of course, I left that dinner. And I went home and I Googled this man, the guy I didn't want to talk to. The guy was stuck sitting at the table worth $9 billion, richest man in Canada, who I didn't have time for because I was too busy being about me, myself, and I, thinking I wanted to schmooze with people. That, my friends, was not just a turning point. That was a wake-up call for John Ireland. God got in my face and said, are you all in? And when he said, we're going to find out tonight, that was a wake-up call for me. I didn't sleep that whole night. Here's the God part of it, that I knew God was in it. That was on a Saturday night. On Sunday after church, I went back to Oprah's house. There was a pool party. I found that guy. I said, hey, Jimmy. Jim Pattison's his name. Hey, Jimmy. You ruined my life last night, dude. I said, I couldn't sleep, but I said, I think God brought you into my life. But I said, I got to know. Do you know Christ? He said, I do, brother. I do, brother. And I said, tell me your story. And then he shared his story of faith with me. And he goes, I hope you respond. I hope I get a call. Well, so then two nights later, I have a board meeting. I don't just do whatever I want. I'm thinking, I got to talk to my board to say, is God in this or was this just a nightmare? So at the board meeting, the board's about ready to meet, and we have a single mom on the board. She comes up to me, and she says, I need to meet with you right now before the meeting. I go, I can't, but I'll meet you right after the meeting. She goes, okay. So at the board meeting, I say, hey, guys, I need to bring you into this conversation I had. It's really disrupted my life. I feel like God's speaking to me, but maybe not. You're going to let me know if you're going to confirm that. So I share the story with the board, and this single mom's eyes are, like, bulging out as I'm telling the story. And I'm like, this is kind of weird. And I share, you know, if we do this, we got to raise $100,000. So after the meeting, the board says, I think God's in it. Let's go for it. After the meeting, she comes up to me and she goes, you know, when my father passed away, he gave me, I inherited $1 million, and I want to tell you, I want to give $100,000 to your church. Maybe we could give it to the Jimmy Fund. Maybe that's the $100,000 we're supposed to raise. I said, oh, Lord, you are real. You just showed up. I mean, it was just such a turning point, such a wake-up call. It was like God had to punch me in the face. Mark chapter 8, open your Bibles. Let's look at the wake-up calls in this passage. And I'm praying that tonight, I don't know. I mean, I know there's more than one person in this room, that there's a turning point going to happen in this room tonight. Something really special. I just feel it. All right, here we go. Three turning points in Mark chapter 8. The first one's it's a personal commitment to Christ. Here's the way I'm just spelling it out. I commit to know, love, and follow Jesus personally. Joey shared, he went to church his whole life. Didn't have a personal relationship with Christ, but he shared right up here 15 minutes ago his turning point. And that's what I'm talking about here. There are people in this room, they're going, yeah, I've been to church, but I don't know Christ. Verse 27 of Mark chapter 8, Jesus and his disciples, they left Galilee. They went up to the villages near Caesarea Philippi. As they were walking along, Jesus asked them, who do people say that I am? Well, They replied, some say John the Baptist. Some say Elijah. Others say you're one of the other prophets. And then he asked them, but who do you say that I am? And Peter replied, you are the Messiah. But Jesus warned them not to tell anyone about him. You know, even back then, people had their own opinions, their own ideas about the Messiah and about Jesus. I mean, it's clear. The question right in front of you and me tonight is, who do you say I am? Some say John the Baptist, some say Elijah, prophet. And what are people today saying out here in the Bay Area? Who do people think Jesus is? You know, I mean, I have family that aren't people of faith. Inspirational teacher, you know, inspirational religious leader, good, solid teacher of morals and ethics. He lived a life worth following. You know, these are the kind of things we hear. I love what Francis Chan, he put it this way. We have the quote on the screen. He said, the world may ask, who is Jesus? But the more important question is, who is Jesus to you? His identity demands a personal response. Let me say that again. His identity, who he is, it demands a personal response that will shape your character, your purpose, and eternity. Who is Jesus to you? Not who is Jesus. I want to ask every one of you in this room, who is Jesus to you? And has he changed your life? Has he impacted, as in this quote, has he impacted your character, your purpose, your eternity? Has he changed the way you think? Is he the most important voice in your life? Does he have authority in how you think? And if not, who does and why? Some of you may be like, well, I don't know. Well, who are you following? Who are you listening to? Whose voice is most authoritative in your life? Might be a news station. It might be a political figure. It might be you fill in the blank. And my question to you is, why? Why are you trusting that voice over any other voice? Have you dug down deep? Have you pursued that journey to go, why? Why do I trust this voice the most? Maybe it's a parent. Maybe it's a mentor. But why, if it's not Jesus, who are you trusting? Who are you listening to? Who are you following? C.S. Lewis, he put it this way. He said, Jesus was either a liar, a lunatic, or Lord. And you must make your choice. Either this man was and is the Son of God, or else a madman or something worse. You can shut him up for a fool. You can spit at him and kill him as a demon. Or you can fall at his feet and call him Lord and God. But let us not come with any patronizing nonsense about his being a great human teacher. He has not left that open to us. In other words, it lacks intellectual integrity to say he's a good teacher. It does. Read the Gospels. Look at his character. Dig deep into his claims. I'm the way, I'm the truth, I'm the life. No one comes to the Father but through me. I'm the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, even though you die, yet you will live. If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. Those are his claims. And then his conquering death. That's what Easter is all about. He died and then he conquered. He rose again and defeated death so that we could spend eternity with him. And the question The most important question that you and I will ever answer is, who is Jesus to you and for you? You got to settle that tonight if you haven't. The stakes are high. Jeremiah 29:12. Underline this one in your Bible if you brought one. God says, you will seek me and find me when you what? Say it out loud. If you're here this weekend and you're seeking God, genuinely seeking God, not going through the motions, but you're going, you're singing. I'm listening. I'm paying attention this weekend. There are men here. You are seeking God. And the scriptures tell us, they remind us, you will seek me. We are. And you'll find me when you seek me with all your heart. I just want to say to the person here tonight that's like, I'm not sure. God honors the genuineness of your heart. You might not have all the answers. You might still have questions. You don't have to have it completely figured out and all together. God's love is for you tonight. His unfailing love is for you tonight. Do you remember at the Last Supper who he served communion to, by the way? He served communion to Judas, who he knew would betray him, to Thomas, who was doubting him, and to Peter, who we're going to learn tomorrow, would deny him. Not once, not twice, three times. I don't even know the guy. Disowned him. And Jesus' love just keeps pursuing. You don't have to have it all together. You are a sinner. You are flawed. You are, and I am too, which is why we need him. It's why we need him, and it's why Jesus died. And then he celebrated that Last Supper going, my body broken, my blood shed for you, Thomas, Judas, Peter. At the end of this message, I'm going to give you an opportunity. For those of you that haven't committed your life to Christ, that haven't welcomed him into your heart, I'm going to invite you at the end of this message to get out of your chair and kneel right here. Just kneel. As an act of surrender, as an act of faith, as an act of saying, I'm all in. Okay? I'm just prepping you. Some of you are getting nervous, like, oh, man, I think maybe that's me. Yeah. What did we say last night on the other side of fear? Great things happen. You watch your life change when you respond to Christ in faith tonight. Here's my second reflection. We're going to go back now to just the few verses right before this passage that we just are looking at. Mark 8, look at verse 22. It says, when they arrived at Bethsaida, some people brought a blind man to Jesus, and they begged him to touch the man and heal him. Now, Jesus does kind of an odd thing. This isn't kind of what they teach you in seminary in terms of healing ministry. Verse 23, Jesus took the blind man by the hand. He led him out of the village, and then spitting on the man's eyes, he laid his hands on him, and he said, can you see anything now? Don't miss this. The man looked around, and he said, yeah, I see people, but I can't see them very clearly. They look like trees walking around. Verse 25, and then Jesus placed his hands on the man's eyes. What's the word? Again. And his eyes were opened. His sight was completely restored, and he could see everything clearly. So why? What's wrong with Jesus? Couldn't he have done it with a first touch? He has the power to do that. He could have done a first touch. I think it's for us. Some of us need a second touch. Some of us got our hell insurance. We raised our hand. I don't know. Maybe you were in high school at Young Life Camp. You got that first touch. You responded to the goodness of God's grace. And people whisper about you. That guy's been in church a long time. Still a grumpy old dude. Still critical. Still negative. Not taking risks. Not sacrificing financially. not discipling anybody, not mentoring anybody, just checking boxes. Come to church. Yeah, I could quote John 3:16 and Romans 5:8 and quote a few verses. You need a second touch tonight. I want to talk to the guy that needs a second touch that went through a divorce and the church condemned you. You went, I'm out, man. I'm in pain. And the church beat me up, condemned me, whispered about me. All my friends, I get divorced and they're like, hey, dude, I want you to know that Jesus does not condemn you. Jesus came to save you, to rescue you. I want to talk to the guy tonight who maybe you served in leadership. Maybe you were on a staff at one time. At one time you were all in, but you're not now. Your heart for Christ is barely beating. Your light, your candle, it's flickering. It's about snuffed out. You're desperate for a second touch. That's why you're here this weekend. You showed up this weekend because you're hungry for more. You want something. You gathered up your faith to say, Lord, maybe if I show up to this camp, I'll meet you again for the first time. And what about the person sitting here that hasn't seen Christ in the crisis? Disappointed with God. Have a guy in a prayer cohort that I'm part of. And he shared this. His language, I thought, was so descriptive. He experienced some heartache in his life. And he said, I've been giving God the cold shoulder for years. You understand that word picture, don't you? I do. I wonder if that quote speaks to somebody tonight. Giving God the cold shoulder. You know what that, no intimacy. What Herman talked about, that intimacy, that close, you don't even know what that is anymore. Because you're mad at God, you're angry at God, you're giving him the cold shoulder. That language just spoke to me. And so tonight, there's some of you that want a second touch. You're desperate for a second touch. And Jesus is in this room tonight. And he's for you. And he's safe in terms of bringing his arms around you and say, I don't care. I don't care what you've done. Tonight, let's make this a turning point in your life. Let's, from now on, let's walk together. Here's the third reflection. The third reflection comes from those last 6-7 verses, Mark chapter 8. This is how I'm going to describe it. This is a turning point for Peter. Another one. I mean, we've already seen two. Here's another one. And here's how I'm describing it. He didn't read the fine print. You're like, what? Well, he's all in for Jesus as long as it's all about him. It's all about me, right, Jesus? It's all about me getting saved, all about me being blessed. And so here's the way I frame this point. I'm ready to die to my selfish journey and commit to live a sacrificial journey with Jesus. Listen to these words. Verse 31 of Mark chapter 8. Then Jesus, this is right after Peter said, You're the Christ. I'm in, man. I'm all in. And here's what Jesus said. Then Jesus began to tell them that the Son of Man must suffer many terrible things, be rejected by the elders, leading priests, and teachers of the religious law, that he'd be killed, but 3 days later he'd rise from the dead. Verse 32, as he talked about this openly with his disciples, who? Peter took him aside and began to reprimand Jesus for saying such things. Pause. Now just sit in that space. Be there. You're one of the disciples watching this. Jesus is pulled aside by Peter, and Peter is rebuking Jesus. It's a little bit awkward, isn't it? A little uncomfortable. And what is Jesus' response? Buckle up right now. What's he say? Jesus turned around and he looked at his disciples and then reprimanded Peter. "Get away from me, Satan," he said. "You're seeing things merely from a human point of view, not from God's." And then calling to the crowd to join his disciples, he said, and you're the crowd tonight. You're in the audience. Listen to these words of Jesus. "If any of you wants to be my follower, you must give up your own way. You must give up your own way. Life does not revolve around you anymore. You are not the Holy Trinity anymore. Me, myself, and I doesn't work anymore. You must give up your own way. You must take up your cross." I'm willing to get uncomfortable for Christ. I'm willing to die to my selfish desires for Jesus. I'm willing to be crucified daily and live beyond myself for the sake of others, because that's the life he's inviting me into. "You must give up your own way, take up your cross," and it's directional, "follow me." That's movement. That's not just here. It's with your feet. It's with your hands. It's with your money. It's with your time. Following Jesus is going to take you into relationships, into opportunities to have an impact on others, into discipling others, serving others, listening to others, blessing others, not just being the victim and being the guy that's going, "No one's talking to me." How about you be interested in others rather than sitting around going, "I hope somebody talked." You be the guy that God uses to bless this weekend. And then he goes on. If you try to hang on to your life, what happens? You're going to lose it. If you keep living your life and making it all about you, building your kingdom, your empire, you're going to lose it. But if you give up your life for my sake, these are the words of Jesus, and for the sake of the gospel, the good news, you'll save it. And what do you benefit if you gain the whole world but lose your own soul? Is anything worth more than your soul? And so this is why I say Peter was a committed follower of Jesus for the benefits, but he didn't read the fine print. Now, it's getting real, right? I mean, it's almost like he's trying to talk us out of following him, right? You read those words? I mean, we're not jumping up going, "Yeah, man, count me in." It's like, whoa. You mean my life's got to change? My priorities have to shift? Yeah. I think that's, as I read the red, I mean, am I taking it out of context? Or does something need to shift in your heart? Can you be a religious jerk for 30 years that people go, "Yeah, this is what our church is like"? No, you can't. We call those Pharisees, people that are finding fault in everybody else. Jesus was the hardest on them. And there's some of us here. We see the flaws in our wife, the flaws in our kids, the flaws in our coworkers, the flaws in our pastors and leaders. We're the critics. We're sin patrol in our churches. We're walking around looking at everybody else, looking, trying to correct. I believe tonight could be a turning point. You do not want to grow old and grumpy and critical. I'm going to tell a story that a friend of mine who was a fundraiser for a Christian organization, and he visited people in their homes, and he went and visited. He goes, I was visiting people, all of them over 60. And he goes, there was no gray area. I was visiting Christian couples, families, people, older people. And they were in one of two categories. They were either kind, generous, interested, prayerful, joyful, or negative, cynical, grumpy Christians. When he told me that, I went, that must break the heart of God. I'm 64. My daughter, who's 30, goes, are you becoming that grumpy old white guy, Dad? She said that to me. Because I can get grumpy. And I can be cynical. And I can get critical. But I don't want to be that guy. Do you? No. That's a second touch for somebody tonight. I'm going to invite you to come down and kneel because you want that second touch. Because you're ready to die to yourself and say, I want God to use me. I want to grow old gracefully and joyfully and generously. We had an ass tonight by Pastor Chuck, man. Let's fund that thing. In this room, we could fund that thing. I believe it. I don't know it. I don't know what you make. I don't know your pocketbook, your bank account, your Schwab account. I bet you we could fund that thing. And now as even I say that, there's somebody in this room that's like, I could fund that thing. Maybe you should. That's between you and the Lord. Let me wrap this up. The self-centered life must be put to death. That's what Jesus is saying. And so he's calling us, this is the way I like to think about it, to choose hard. How many of you grow through being comfortable? Life's easy. It's like, oh yeah, man, I'm growing. It's so easy. I'm so comfortable. No, no, no. We grow when we choose hard. We grow when we get uncomfortable. We grow when we take risks, when we get out of the boat, when we go into the deep water. That's when we grow. And so tonight, I'm going to close with this quote. And I'm going to invite you to come if you want to make a spiritual decision tonight. If you want tonight to be a turning point in your life. It might be a first-time commitment. It might be a second touch. It might be, I just know that I've been living a self-centered life, and I want to recommit and die to myself and get on my knees as a commitment to God. And then I'm going to ask our pastors and our Twin Lakes prayer team to just come up and put a hand on people that are kneeling and just pray a blessing over them. Not going to do an interview with you. Not going to talk. Just going to lay a hand on you and pray that the Holy Spirit would touch you, heal you, bless you, empower you, encourage you. Put that last quote on the Brother Andrew, God Smuggler. I read this quote a couple of weeks ago, and it just rocked me. I loved it. In fact, let's stand together and read it out loud together. It's a great way to close. All right, let's read it together. Whenever, wherever, however you want me, I'll go. And I'll begin this very minute. Lord, as I stand up from this place and as I take my first step forward, will you consider this a step toward complete obedience to you? I'll call it the step of yes. Let's pray. And then I'm going to invite you to come forward when you're ready, and the band's coming up. Right now, just put your hand on your heart as a sign that you want God to have your heart right now. Wherever you're at spiritually tonight, put your hand on your heart. God, this is our prayer. We just said it out loud. Whenever, wherever, however you want me to go, I will go. I will say yes. This very minute, I'll begin. Lord, as I stand up in this place, and as I take my first step forward, movement. You said, follow me. That means I got to move. Will you consider this a step of faith, a step of obedience to you? And I'll call it the step of yes. And I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going from the platform to my knees tonight because I need a second touch tonight. John Ireland needs a second touch tonight. And I wonder if there's anybody else going to join me up here. When you're ready, just come forward and just kneel all up in front of this stage. And then our pastor is going to just pray a blessing over you as our band plays and we worship. God bless you.